Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for listening in and sharing your Sunday evening with me. Well, we got a lot of interesting things to talk about today, and there's some very sensitive areas to talk about today as well. We're going to be talking about Antifa, which has been all over the news, and I have some people that have called into me and sent me emails regarding Antifa and what they're all about, so I want to address that. Another hot topic that's out there right now is the anti-abortion issues that are going on. And I've gotten emails about that, so I want to address some of those things. And then the third thing I want to talk about today would be the National Threat Assessment Report from 2018 that was just released by the Secret Service on mass attacks in public places. So there's going to be some very good information. A lot of this is media driven. And as a result of that, I got an influx of emails, you know, et cetera. And so I'm going to address it. Rather than address all the emails, I chose these topics to discuss. Now, if anybody's interested in calling in today, as always, I ask you to call me at 818-602-4929. Or you can go to the website. Our website has the phone number as well. Listen up with JP at PottsandAssociates.com. Or if you want to get my blog blast that I do every week with an email blast about upcoming show topics, then just give us a shout and we'll get you on there. Just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. Again, text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address, and we'll send you the heads up, so to speak, on what the upcoming topics are going to be for the show. Okay, let's get busy. I want to start out by sending out a shout out real quick. You know, anytime there's a fallen police officer, I always want to, have a discussion along those lines because, as you know, as a former police officer, it's a very sensitive issue for me. Another police officer died, and this one died in Georgia about a week ago now, actually. And the officers had apparently responded to a suspect's car when they were approaching the vehicle when the shooting took place. Two officers, including the suspect, sustained injuries, were transported to an area hospital. And then one of the police officers unfortunately died. The suspect is not expired, and I'm sure he'll be facing charges. But my real concern is that, think about it, how many times on the air now have I told you about police officers that have been killed in the line of duty? So far in 2019, there are 41 officers that have died in the line of duty. You know, and the causes range from, being hit by vehicles to suffering medical emergencies, as well as being shot in the line of duty. And I have to tell you, the last time the overall number was at 40 at this point in the year was back in 1965. What does that tell you? You know, there's some serious issues that are going on out there. So I want to send a shout out to the family of the fallen officers and the other officer who was injured as well. Now, I have another issue that I want to talk about when it comes to police officers, because there's a serious situation that's going on right now on the internet. Now, I know it's a sensitive issue. There was a police officer killed a few days ago. There was a police officer who was Caucasian that shot another black suspect. And, of course, there's outrage about that. And I understand that for some people, it is an emotional issue, but I cannot stress enough about how police officers are out there, generally speaking, trying to help the community. And I fault the media for some of this because the media has a tendency to when it comes to a police officer that's white that shoots a black person, they pound the news with that. And you never hear about it the opposite way. But there's something else is happening that I actually I've got to share with you. There's a website out there right now where this individual, I don't even want you to know his name, quite frankly, but he's selling dead cop t-shirts. Dead cop t-shirts are being sold online mocking the execution of a St. Louis police officer. His name was Michael Lansdorf. This officer had only been on the job 3 months. It was in St. Louis County, in St. Louis. This is an absolute disgrace for somebody to be selling dead cop t-shirts and profiting by the misfortune of others. This is totally wrong. Not only is he selling these t-shirts, but they also have online, they got a video showing the suspect struggle with the officer and then shot the officer at point blank range in the back of the neck. The bullet traveled through his neck out into his chest. And the video surveillance is inside the store and captured the entire incident. And I don't know how this individual got this video, but got the video, and I guess is what it's on. It's on YouTube. And this is an absolute disgrace, in my opinion. He was executed as he lay face down on the floor, and the suspect just stood over him and shot him like this. This is a horrible tragedy for any police officer or any individual. And I don't care what your political affiliation is. I don't care about any of that. This has to do with morals, morality. How do you do something like this? And the t-shirt he's got, he's selling these t-shirts for $28 each, talking about one down, many more to go. This is an absolute disgrace. At any rate, I don't even want to mention this guy's name. If you, you know, you could probably Google it and find it out there, whatever the case may be. But I just think that this is, like I said, I just think it's a horrible disgrace. And hopefully it's not gonna survive, and hopefully he's not gonna make money off of this. I don't know. We'll just wait and see. Now look, I've been getting some other calls and emails regarding the situation going on with ICE right now and these raids. Look, as I told you, I do not get in the middle of these issues regarding politics. This situation with ICE, in my opinion, has to do with if they are breaking the law, they're following the law, whatever the case may be. But I don't do the politics thing. If ICE is operating within the legal guidelines, then that's what it is for me. I don't look at it one way or another. Is it right or is it wrong? But it's important, obviously, to any of us that they're operating properly. And from everything I've seen on the news, they appear to be doing that. Not getting into the immigration thing again. I've addressed that about the wall in the past. But it's their duty to do what they're doing. And I know some of the politicians out there are talking about abolishing ICE. And that, to me, would be a concern because ICE is part of Homeland Security. If you get rid of ICE, you got to get rid of Homeland Security. And that's ridiculous, in my opinion, because they are out there working to our benefit. I was a part of that when I worked on the intelligence team, the open source intelligence team for the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, as you know. And my specialty was South and Central America. So I'm sensitive, at least, to the issues about, you know, things that may be happening south of the border that could impact our security here. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with all of this with ICE. You asked me to respond. I'm responding to it. And we'll just see what ends up happening. But again, I feel that they should be doing these actions from a legal perspective. And unfortunately, none of us are going to be able to control this one way or another because we're all the pawns of the media and we're the pawns of the politicians when you really just look at that. Okay. You know, I always like to get my emails in. So here we go. Again, if anybody wants to comment, you know, on the situation about these dead T-shirts, I'd be really curious to see, you know, if there's any outrage out there about that. The number is 818-602-4929. Or you guys can send me an email, as so many people do. And speaking about emails, let's get into the emails as well. Okay, Jim, did you by any chance hear about the teenager who was arrested in Indiana when he told Siri that he was going to shoot up a school? Siri told the police about it. How wild is that? Hank from Tampa, Florida. Well, Hank, first of all, let's just get it clarified because we always want to make sure our information is correct. So let's take a look at that because that 13-year-old, Siri did not drop the dime on the 13-year-old. That's not what happened. And this, for some of you who have not heard about this, It happened in Indiana. So the Indiana police are the ones who arrested two boys, not one, two. After, you know, and the one was 13 years old. He told Siri that he was going to shoot up the school. Siri responded to the boy with a spoken listing of local schools in Paparizio, where the teen was visiting from his home in the nearby town of Chesterton. This is in Indiana. It wasn't Apple's digital iPhone assistant that informed law enforcement about the apparent threat. So Siri did not do that, but Siri turns around and gives them a list of the schools. The teenager is the one who posted. He posted a video screenshot of his conversation with Siri on social media, and people who saw the post contacted the police, and he was arrested the same day. Now, apparently, there was also a 14-year-old boy whose photos of guns were added to the post. He was arrested also. So you've got a 13-year-old and a 14-year-old. Now, the 13-year-old was charged with felony intimidation. But the investigators also determined that his threat was not credible. It was discovered that the male had no access to the weapons, posted the picture on social media as a joke. All right, but you know, these days, people don't take this stuff as a joke. They take this stuff serious. Teenagers are not. And this also goes to parents. You've heard, and my regular listeners have heard me talk about this before, that parents have got to take responsibility to watch what their children are doing. This is another classic example. Watch what they're doing. And now this kid has been arrested. He's going to have a police record. I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening with him. And, you know, whether it's a serious threat or not, it's still a threat. And quite frankly, he may have to pay some price. We'll have to wait and see. Now, the kid that had the 14-year-old who had the photos of the guns, he's no longer has access to those weapons. He acknowledged that the photographs that they were taken, but denied involvement in making any such threats. So he's being held on felony charges of intimidation, criminal recklessness with a handgun, apparently based on the gun photos on his cell phone. Both teams are being held at the Juvenile Detention Center in Porter County. That's in Indiana. So look, I don't, you know, prank or not, they got to understand, and my regular listeners have heard me talk on the show regarding schools and these various school shootings, et cetera. We have to take this stuff serious. And kids cannot be doing these kind of pranks. It's just too serious. So anyway, Hank, I wanted to clarify, you know, specifically what this was all about. So there it is. Okay, the next email. Jim, recently a disgruntled employee at a car dealership killed two co-workers and then killed himself. I work at a dealership, and for me, this is scary because we see a lot of employees get upset over sales-related things, and we see also customers who come in to get upset as well. Do you have any words or tips? Thanks, Susan from Sacramento. Susan, I've actually spoken about this a number of times, and that's also archived on some of my shows. All of the shows are archived, so you can go back and look at all of the different tips that we have out there, safety tips for active shooter, the common signs to look out for, et cetera, on a potential active shooter as well. So that's all there. But I will tell you that, you know, I have a number of clients that are car dealerships. It's very, very stressful in that industry because everything is commission driven. People get very upset. It's a very stressful industry, you know, in a certain respect, because they're all working on a commission basis. Now, that dealership that you're talking about was a Ford dealership, and that was in Northern California, for those of you who did not hear about that. But they say that the gunman was a disgruntled employee or former employee at the dealership. And I tell people all the time that let's just take for a moment and say that he was a former employee. Now, look, the relationship that you have with your coworkers makes a big deal. If you look at these active shooter situations, you will see a lot of times when these people go back there and start shooting as active shooters, they're not just looking for the supervisors and looking for the managers, et cetera. They're also approaching people who they worked with and did not get along with. So I have always urged people in a working environment, look, you guys got to get along. Violence in the workplace, the statistics on violence in the workplace are off the charts. And employers have an affirmative duty and obligation to curtail that as much as possible. But they can't be every place all the time. It's how you get along with your coworkers that could make the difference. So that's what I would say, Susan. You may be, you know, somewhat, you know, afraid of the work environment or those circumstances, but hey, do your part. You know, spread the word. You know, and you know, hopefully that'll help for right now. But go back to the archive and look at it a little bit more in detail, as well. All right. Okay, that happened in Morgan Hill, all right, which is, I don't know, about 25 minutes southeast of San Jose, California. Okay, third email. Here we go. Jim, I was in one of your active shooter trainings, and you talked about road rage. Now, I was one of those maniacs and have since changed in that regard, thanks to your training. Now I read about a kid in Houston, Texas that got arrested when he shot into another car that had fireworks in it. It seems that the fireworks ignited from his gun and hurt the family. I am glad I changed my behavior. You were so right. Thanks, Johnny, Dallas, Texas. Well, for those of you who did not hear about that, let me just tell you. There was a teenager that was arrested in Houston, and yes, it was a road rage shooting. Now, here's basically what happened. This individual apparently shot into the other vehicle. The vehicle had fireworks because they were getting ready to celebrate the 4th of July. Now, when he shot into it and the bullet hit the fireworks, it ignited the fireworks. And it consumed the inside of the pickup truck that these people were driving and injuring two toddlers and their parents. Two toddlers getting caught up in this who had nothing to do with whatever the road rage incident was. And again, here we go. A teenager. This kid is 18 years old. 18 years old. So he was arrested that following Monday after July 4th. Now, those fireworks actually exploded. And it was a moving pickup. So it was actually moving along. He shoots in there. And by the way, what do you think that he was shooting? Now, again, this is an 18 years old. He was using an AR-15 rifle. Can you believe that? An AR-15 rifle shoots into a pickup truck with a family of four. Well, he's been arrested and he's being charged with four counts of aggravated assault in connection with the incident. And he's lucky, you know, aggravated assault. And you're talking about, remember something, there's four people in that vehicle. Those are four different charges of aggravated assault, you know. And it started as a road rage incident, according to the police down there, you know. And the sad part about it is, according to the authorities, that both parties had an opportunity to break it off somewhere during the incident. So, you know, they said it was about 20 minutes that elapsed between the initial encounter and the gunfire. So you're talking about 20 minutes of road rage, 20 minutes. And then he starts shooting into this vehicle. So who knows? And these little toddlers, one is a 1-year-old and a 2-year-old, severely burned. They got to walk through life now because of a road rage incident. And they got to have surgery. And apparently they're going to have a long road of recovery ahead of them. And these two little babies had nothing to do with whatever the drivers of those two vehicles were fighting about or raging about. Absolutely ridiculous. And for those of you that haven't heard me talk about this before, I always talk about this road rage situations, how they can very easily get out of control. And I tell people, look, why do you want to change your life or the life of your family behind road rage with somebody you don't even know? Why would you possibly let a stranger change your life and the life of your family? Think about it. Think about it. So, Johnny, I'm glad that you changed. Hopefully other people that I've talked about have changed. But I'll tell you one thing. I can tell you another person who needs to listen to the show, because there was an Alabama woman who also got into a road rage incident. And listen to this. She attempted to shoot another person involved in a dispute. So she's in a road rage situation with another person and fires her gun. Who do you think she hits? She doesn't hit the person she was upset with. She shot her husband. She shot her husband instead of the person she was in the incident with. Now, if she's in the vehicle, that means she had to try to shoot across her husband and missed and hit him as opposed to the person who she was upset with in the road rage incident. And what in the hell was she doing with a gun at all anyway like that? That, you know, again, these people are getting involved in these kind of things. You got to understand, this stuff is just ridiculous. All right? Ridiculous. And where does she shoot him? She shoots him in the head. I mean, you know, he's in stable condition, so he's lucky. But she was arrested. She's 31 years old. She was arrested. And, you know, we'll see what happens to her. But she's basically being charged with attempted murder and also assault and reckless endangerment. So the assault and reckless endangerment is who? Because of her husband. So she's going to get charged with that when she shot her husband. And then it's going to be attempted murder of the other person that she was attempting to shoot at. Her life, her husband's life, have now been changed forever. The woman's in jail. No bond is available to her. Why change your lives, guys, for a stranger? Somebody you don't even know. Okay, those are the emails. Let's keep moving through this. I want to talk to you about Antifa. Antifa has been all over the news. I've got some inquiries from some people, and they're talking about this Antifa. Can you explain it a little bit more? Because on the news, all they do is mention the name Antifa. Look, let me just tell you something. Antifa, it's a movement, it's a conglomeration of autonomous anti-fascist groups in the United States. That's who they are. The principal feature of that group is their use of direct action. They take direct action. And the conflicts occur both online and in real life. And they engage in varied protest tactics, which includes digital activism, property damage, physical violence, and harassment against those whom they identify as fascist, racist, or on the far right, so to speak. Now, these activists involved in the movement tend to be anti-capitalists, and they also subscribe to a wide range of ideologies. Now, look, let me tell you something. This group is not a new group, first of all. Their stated focus is on fighting far-right and white supremacist ideologies directly rather than through the electoral means. They don't believe in the process. They feel that it's necessary for them to take action. So when you're watching the news and you look at these individuals, and I'm going to explain a little bit more about how to spot them, you know, when you see these riots and things of that nature, because they also work with a group called the Black Bloc, which I've explained about before, and I'll kind of touch that a little bit. But again, you've heard me say on the show that a lot of this stuff is not new. This issue about Antifa, guys, hey, let me tell you something. It started back in the mid-1920s, and it was an oppositional force out there. They were anti-fascist movements that surfaced in Italy and countries such as the United States as well. This all goes back to the 1920s. Had to do with Benito Mussolini, okay, after he came into power. So that's how far back this goes. So many of these leaders in the United States were anarchists. They were socialites from Italy, all right? Now, there's no organizational connection. See, that's another one of these groups that I've told you about before where it's not like they have the head of Antifa. It's not like that. There's no body of these individuals that meet on a regular basis. Is what happens is that they have the ideologies that they spew out there on the internet. People pick up, they like the ideology, and because of the internet, now they can at least be communicating behind the scenes, and they organize that way with groups of people who just want to plain listen. Now, I can tell you that after World War II, the violent confrontations with the fascist elements continued sporadically. It was only sporadic back then. But now, modern Antifa politics can be traced to opposition to the infiltration of Britain's punk scene, believe it or not, by white power skinheads. And that started in the 1970s and the 1980s. So just to give you a timeline with this, this is not new. But it's what you're hearing now is more and more on the news about this because of the political upheaval now that's going on. Now, there's various anti-fascist movements that exist in the United States since the beginning of fascism, quite frankly. And by the way, Antifa, that's kind of an adopted name from German usage. It only came into prominence as an umbrella term in English in 2017. So that name is relatively new. So just to let you know that. But Antifa is an umbrella term for a loose collection of groups, networks, and individuals. Those of you that are regular listeners, you've heard me talk about the internet and the way that the internet is being used for people to spew their ideologies, and they can reach a lot more people that way. So that's how they get the word out and to appear at these different places to do their protests. Now, it is composed of autonomous groups, and they have no formal organization or membership. It's nothing like that. And basically, from a law enforcement standpoint, it's impossible to know how many groups are really active. You just see them appear at these different things. And again, I'm going to tell you how to find them when you see these different riots and things of that nature. But Antifa groups either form loose support, networks, or they operate independently, which means two or three people getting together. They've got the ideology in their heads, and they just go out and do these things because they don't like it. So you can see them at political rallies. You can see them attacking, let's say, people in restaurants of a political persuasion, I'll say. So that's how you're going to see these things. Now, they typically organize protests via the social media through websites and email lists. So you can see that there is some organization to it, but there's no head of the state, so to speak. So some of these activists have built their own peer-to-peer networks or use encrypted texting services like Signal. There's this one out there called Signal. Now, they had this, and they really came into prominence. They grew after the 2016 presidential election, and now there's approximately 200 groups of these that currently exist in the United States, and it's of different sizes and different levels of engagements. The sad part about it, in my opinion, is that they subscribe to a range of ideologies. And so you can't pin them down that there's any one thing that they don't like. And that makes it a little bit more difficult, once again, for law enforcement to be able to bring them into, to rein them in, so to speak. Now, they participate in violent actions because they believe that elites are controlling the government and the media. So they need to make a statement head on against those people who they regard as racist, etc. So, again, their ideologies, and by the way, they're not of any particular, ethnic group, okay? Because anybody can belong to Antifa, so just to let you know that. It's not like that. Now, they got to understand hate speech is not free speech, because sometimes people turn around and say, well, freedom of speech, I can say what I want, so they can protest, they can do this, they can do that. Nobody's arguing about the rights of somebody to be able to protest. It's when the violence starts breaking out that creates the problem. And that's what Antifa is all about, because they've got this idea of direct action. All right? They're going to go where they think they need to go. That's the problem. Now, is that a form of domestic terrorism, in my opinion? Yes, it is. Okay? Because that kind of violent behavior is going to be problematic to the system that we have here in the United States. So if they get caught, they could be subject to prosecution. And they can't fall back on free speech if they're engaged in violence at the same time. Now, I will tell you on a positive side, to be honest with you, believe it or not, there is a positive side to Antifa. They actually engage in mutual aid, such as disaster response, like when Hurricane Harvey hit. They actually rallied and helped. So there's another side to them. So to be fair, I would do want to give both sides. So they are activists in that respect as well. They also, according to the statistics, they have a 40-year-old practice of providing spaces for refugees and immigrants, which entails outright refusal to cooperate with ICE, as an example. So I don't know that you want to call that a negative or a positive about that piece of it, but I'm sure that they're thinking that's the right thing to do. So they reach out to people. So all of their behavior is not violent behavior. So I'm giving you the pros and the cons of this group. All right. Now, I want to remind you of something. Do you remember when there was the riots in Berkeley? It was in April 2017. Let me just tell you, those Berkeley protests, I've told people before, those Berkeley protests, if you had looked close, you would have seen these individuals wearing like these hoodies and these black masks and black hoodies that cover their heads and part of their face. Antifa was there along with the Black Bloc. The Black Bloc, I'm not talking about people of color. That's not what we mean by it. When they had that protest in Berkeley, it was all over the news. They were smashing windows. They were doing all kinds of damage. They were throwing Molotov cocktails, if you remember that, smashing windows, etc. That was $100,000 worth of damage. That was Antifa, and along with the Black Bloc. So when you see protests where there's violence like that, look close. You won't see that. I won't say you won't see anybody other than the people wearing what I just told you. But just look close. You'll see these people there. They have black face masks on. They've got black hoodies that they pull over their heads. That's the Black Bloc and also Antifa that are operating. And if you look close, you'll see those are the ones doing the damage because that's what they believe in. Okay? So that gives you an idea about Antifa. I touched a little bit on the Black Bloc, but I've done that before. But these riots and things of these natures that they see, they are definitely there. And they are there to create havoc without a doubt. Okay. Now, as I told you at the beginning, a lot of what I'm talking about today are things that are media driven. It's violence. It's all forms of domestic terrorism. The other hot button topic right now is this business about anti-abortion. Now, look, I'm getting emails asking me about the political controversy over abortions. As I've told my readers or listeners, I don't take sides. All right, with any of these political issues, I try to stay away from them. These different states that are coming up with the issue about abortion, whether it's right or wrong, I'm not getting into that because I think that's for everybody, that's a very personal issue. So I want you to understand that in the past and in the present, there's actually anti-abortion violence. That's the part I have an issue with. Look, you can protest these different, legislative enactments. Vote these people out if you don't like the way that they're handling abortion. Vote them out. What I don't like is the violence. That's what I speak out against. Now, let me give you an example. There was an individual called Dr. George Tiller, and you can find this out. All right. Dr. George Tiller was murdered. It's actually 10 years ago. So this is his 10th anniversary of his death. And some people call it the assassination of Dr. George Tiller. Now, let me just tell you, this issue of violence has been a central tenet of the anti-abortion movement since before the United States Supreme Court decided Roe versus Wade. So a lot of people use Roe versus Wade as an issue, but this issue of abortion and anti-abortion violence goes way before that. Now, this individual, Dr. Tiller, he was an activist. He was an activist, no doubt about it. Activists have sought control over the reproductive freedom of millions of people, particularly women of color, low-income women and families, and queer and gender nonconforming and transgender communities. But they've used violence as a tactic of control, abuse, and fear across this country. That piece to me is what's wrong. Now, Dr. Tiller, he was in Wichita, Kansas. He was the only abortion provider for 40 years and was known for his deep commitment to trusting women and their families' reproductive health decisions. And because of his work, he was a target of many anti-abortion groups before he was killed. He had even survived a clinic bombing and a prior shooting. This is wrong because somebody has a different ideology from you. We can't use violence to resolve these issues. Killing this man, what did it do? Absolutely nothing. Because here it is 10 years later, and we still have the same issues. And this is an issue that was going on, like I said, way before Roe versus Wade. Now, I will also tell you that Dr. Tiller's murder wasn't an isolated incident. Anti-abortion extremists have killed at least 11 people since the 1990s. Their violent history includes the first recorded murder of an abortion provider, which was a guy by the name of Dr. David Gunn. That was in 93. All right. Then there was a shooting in 2015 at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs, which claimed 3 lives and injured 9 people. Come on. We cannot endorse the violent behavior. I understand that it's a very emotional issue. I get it. But now you're going to murder people? Well, their logic is that, you know, they're murdering a fetus. They're murdering an unborn child. So I guess they think the two rights make them wrong. It doesn't. And again, I'm not getting on either side of this abortion issue. I'm simply speaking out against people taking violent behavior to press their ideologies on somebody else. I think that's wrong. I think you need to talk to your politicians. If they go in a direction that's contrary to your beliefs, vote them out of office. That's the only way that we can do this. But taking lives like this, and yes, I know, and don't send me the hate mail. I understand about the fact that it could be taking a life. So, but if you're telling me, you know, it's tit for tat situation, I don't agree with that. You know, I don't agree with it. We have to go by what the laws are in this country. You don't like the laws. You don't like the politicians that are voting in one way or another. Then vote them out of office. But you don't go around killing people. Now, let me just tell you, for every reported murder, there's been countless incredible threats of violence against abortion providers. And that's just not all of it. It's arson, it's burglary, vandalism against health clinics. Some are isolated events, but others are part of a highly organized and premeditated showing of force that seeks to intimidate providers and deter people from seeking care. All right? And again, I'm not getting into whether it's right or it's wrong, who should go, who shouldn't go, and the rest of that. I'm only talking about the violence part of it. I just got through telling you about one clinic where 3 people got killed and 9 others got wounded. Well, think about something. Probably the other ones that got wounded or 3 of the ones that got killed, they weren't doctors. They were employees who just simply worked there. It was a paycheck for them. You know, they worked there. They're nurses, whatever the case may be. They just worked there. And yet, they had to pay, 3 of them had to pay the ultimate price. And I can tell you that this acts of violence like this, it goes back further. Now, the National Abortion Federation, they track these incidents. And they said that there's a record number of violent and disruptive incidents at clinics in 2018. This is last year. Now, let me just tell you, in 2018, this organization who tracks this recorded the greatest number of trespassing incidents since the organization began tracking back in 1999. Incidents of obstruction of healthcare facilities doubled from 2017 to 2018. This is a serious issue for people out there, and I get it. You know, it's a very sensitive issue. But violence is not the way. Because violence against abortion providers and incursions on the physical, clinical property, staff, and volunteers, that these people are being subjected to violence. And to me, that's wrong. Now, look, the recent escalation in violence, it's being mirrored by the increasingly extreme restrictions on abortions as seen in state houses across the country. That's why it's escalating. 28 states have now introduced bills that would ban abortion in some way in the first few months of 2019, of this year. Now, look, I'm not getting into that. One example, Alabama passed a total abortion ban without exception for rape or incest. It carries a penalty of up to 99 years in prison for doctors who provide an abortion. The Texas legislators have introduced a restriction that could subject people to the death penalty for having an abortion. Look, these measures may seem extreme, all right? People are fighting out against it. Once again, I get it. I understand it. But I still think that violence is not the way. You can't go in and start killing people and shooting people up, and you don't even know who's the doctor, who's not the doctor, whatever the case may be. You know, so I'm never going to be, as a former police officer, I'm never going to be in favor of people shooting and killing. It's just that simple. Now, when Dr. Tiller was fatally shot, the guy shot him in the head. He was actually in church at a Reformation Lutheran church in Wichita. He was serving as an usher and handing out church bulletins. After threatening to shoot two people who initially pursued him, the perpetrator fled and escaped in his car. 3 hours after that, he was arrested. So that was good. But he shot and killed him, shot Dr. Tiller in the head and killed him. He was charged with first-degree murder and two counts of aggravated assault in connection with that shooting. He was convicted. He was convicted. He didn't get the death penalty. He got life imprisonment without parole for the first 50 years, I believe. The maximum sentence available in Kansas, but then the no parole term was later reduced to 25 years. So he's got to at least do 25 years. And that was starting in 2010. So in 2035, he's going to be eligible to get out. All right. And this, again, these laws vary state by state. This was in Kansas. So I don't know. You know, again, I say that all this is wrong when you start talking about shooting people. You just cannot do it that way. Now, these other threats. Now, they're saying that these threats have doubled. And given the political climate and the increase in hate incidents throughout the country, it's more important than ever that law enforcement and prosecutors, they got to appropriately respond to anti-abortion criminal activity. They're going to have to do it. They got to clamp down on it. Now, according to the National Abortion Federation, they said that their clinics have reported more incidents, as I told you, and picketing. I don't want to leave that one out. They've been getting death threats. They've been getting threats of harm. And it's up from 2016. In one case, a caller told the clinic staff he would do anything and everything to stop the unmitigated murders of fetuses. I'm not going to give you the language he used, but he says, I'm going to stop these atrocities by killing if I have to. I will blow you up if I have to. I will burn clinics down. I will do whatever is necessary. I swear to God I will. So I'm giving you a quote straight from the organization. Now, this particular guy, he was a member of the extremist anti-abortion group called Army of God. That's one of the ones listed as a hate group in this country. And he's been charged with two counts of making threats to injure another. So he's going to get his time. But I can tell you that if we don't take serious action against these individuals, we are going to be paying the price as a society. I understand about the issue about abortions. However, violence, in my opinion, is not the way. Please, you don't like what your legislators, the way that they're voting, get out. Get out and vote. Do it that way. Okay, listen. The acting secretary put out a statement on Secret Service National Threat Assessment. They did an annual report on mass attacks on public spaces. All right, now you know that's really my thing. Now, I want to tell you something. Homeland Security has joined forces with the Secret Service now. The report that they just put out went through 27 targeted attacks last year that occurred in public spaces during 2018. Now, you know that I've talked about tips, and they're all, you know, all the shows are archived, so you can go back and look at all the different topics and go back to it. But 27 open spaces, I've recently, for those of you that are listening for the first time possibly, I recently did a show on mass shootings in open spaces and crowded areas. So go back and listen to those, because I put a lot of safety tips on there as well. So I don't want to go back through that, because the regular listeners have already heard it. All right. But I can tell you that since 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security has utilized the special resources within the Secret Service to better protect our public spaces. Now, we don't normally think about the Secret Service that way. We just think about the Secret Service as protecting the president. But just to let you know, that is not the case. All right. They are out there. And this report that you can actually go online and read the whole report, It was very good. Very good. And these 27 incidents, happened between January and December of last year. Now, just to be clear, remember what I told you about mass attacks and domestic terrorism and active shooter situations, that you always have to have three or more persons harmed before it's considered an active shooter situation. And it always has to be an incident that takes place in the public. So if somebody is in their home and they turn around and shoot three people for some odd reason, that would not be considered an active shooter situation because it's on private property, it's in the home, whatever the case may be. So if you hear about these drive-bys, things of that nature, that's not the same thing. Some of these gang-related shootings with these drive-bys, those aren't considered domestic terrorism, believe it or not. I've talked about MS-13 as a domestic terrorism group, and that's different because with them, they shoot and kill, kidnap people, etc. So that is a domestic terrorism group as far as I'm concerned. This report, you had to go back down through memory lane with some of this, where that gunman fatally shot two and injured two, inside of a restaurant. You might remember that one in Hurstboro, Alabama, last year. All of these kind of things, was contained in the report. Now, I will tell you that the report and the information in there also gives best practices to organize and prevent future behavior, future violence. Now, let me just tell you, regardless of whether these attacks were acts of workplace violence, domestic violence, school-based violence, or inspired by ideology, similar themes were observed in the behaviors and circumstances of the perpetrators and were not the result of a single cause or motive. It was across the board. So, what did I just tell you? These were acts of workplace violence, domestic violence, which I've told you has spilled over into the workplace, school-based violence, or that was inspired by some ideology. And this is about ideology. Just remember what I told you. This stuff is just on the internet. People put things out there, somebody captures it, and they get it in their heads, and now they want to do the same thing. Now, the report also talked about preventing targeted violence as an issue that concerns all of us. The Secret Service, they are going to remain committed to supporting the efforts with the Department of Homeland Security and keeping their community safe by providing guidance on threat assessments through research and the sharing of information. I've spoke about that before, where, in fact, all of the law enforcement agencies are now getting together, okay, in a concerted effort. And remember what I also said. If you see it, speak up. Say something. All right? Now, the study also found that early warning signs could be identified and that targeted violence is preventable if appropriate systems are in place to identify and concerning behaviors. That's critical. People don't speak up enough, but as I keep emphasizing it, we have to understand that we have to help law enforcement in this area. Now, the Secret Service has been conducting research. They've been doing training, consultation, and information sharing on threat assessments and the prevention of targeted violence. That's fantastic. And it's all geared toward mass attacks in public places. All right? So we're out there. We're trying. It's a systematic approach that identifies individuals as well who may be exhibiting threatening or concerning behaviors and assessing the risk posed by individuals such as these. So the continuous academic research-based approach is what's going on now also. So now it's heading into the classrooms. People are being trained what to look out for. And I think that that's phenomenal. We need that. As you know, I do a lot of active shooter training. I've been doing this training for quite some time now. My group has trained over 20,000 individuals in different states, etc. And we're going to keep doing the same thing. It's critical. Now, the Secret Service report, check it out. All right? Check it out. But I will tell you that almost all of the alleged criminals in these 27 mass attacks last year had experienced a major stressor in their lives, and almost all had made alarming or threatening communications directed in the presence of others. And in more than 75% of the cases, someone else had noticed a sign of concern. And yet they didn't say anything. Now look, every act of violence can't be prevented. But at least if we try to speak up, we see something, somebody tells us, report it to the authorities. That's what we need. Out of all 27 of those reports in closing, only two of those attacks had ideological components to them. One in which an anti-abortion perpetrator, which I just spoke about, who attacked a Planned Parenthood clinic, and the attack at the synagogue that you guys might remember. So just remember something else. While there's no single profile of a person who committed targeted violence, there's many other things that we can do. All right? Final note, we want the community to know that prevention is everyone's responsibility and that we all have a role. Trust your gut instinct. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And do me a favor, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe. More importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, guys.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.